Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is Jobsolete. I'm Helen Hong.
And I'm Matt Beat, and today we're talking about The Alchemist.
So the theory went that as metals age below the ground, they grow and improve into better forms of metal, kind of like a potato.
I had a friend growing up who would take apart computers and then try to put them back together. I thought this was crazy. But it's hard to deny our innate desire to tinker. We just like to create stuff. But hey, what if we could create money? Or cure all diseases and achieve immortality? Okay, I may have lost you with that last one. But those were real aspirations for the job we are looking at in today's episode. It's a job that first appeared in ancient China, India, Egypt, and Greece, and it was so common that pretty much every village had at least one. So join us as today we are carefully mixing a bunch of facts to look at the history of the alchemist.
Whoa, your intro was very trippy.
I'm always tripping. Hey, Helen, we have chemistry, right?
Yeah, actually, a lot of our listeners say that we do. Thank you, listeners.
I would argue that alchemy is the precursor to modern chemistry. Chemistry deals with substances, so breaking it down to the smallest level to see how these different substances interact and combine and change and all this. Well, shoot, alchemy, I mean, they were doing that hundreds of years before modern chemistry.
The only thing I know about alchemists is there's a very famous novel called The Alchemist, and most of that story actually doesn't involve alchemy. It's like this journey of this person and like self-discovery. But I think I do remember the alchemist in that book trying to make gold.
Yeah, that's actually the first thing I thought of when I heard alchemist. And yeah, let's go over the definition here of an alchemist. Just simply put, the job was trying to transform things for the better.
Oh, this sounds like me whenever I try to go on a jog. I'm trying to better myself, Matt.
Oh,
I'm trying to better myself by going on a run.
Good for you.
I lost you. Well, we actually have an in-house expert, don't we?
Yeah, we got lucky on this one.
Our own Amelia Palka, who is our in-house researcher, she's amazing. And she happens to be an expert on alchemists.
So we'll hear from her telling us about just how popular this profession was.
So it's impossible to tell how many alchemists there were in the past, because most of them did not actually run around calling themselves alchemists. They usually had day jobs that were normal medieval or early modern jobs. They worked leather, or they were silversmiths. Basically anything that would give them a little bit of spare money to buy chemical ingredients and try and mix them together in their basement. there was a small but very visible subset who referred to themselves as an alchemist, and they had a really great business model, which is they'd seek out royal patrons and try and get these royals to give them lots of money for research and development, basically.
I love that they're like, hey, king, I know you want me to make this lead into gold, but you know what I need for that? Gold.
Yeah, more on that in a little bit, because some of them were scam artists. I mean, alchemists believed in transmutation, and it was like a very holistic attitude. It's about purity of mind and body and spirit. Everything's connected, you know, and that's why it kind of delved into mysticism a little bit.
Yeah, and a lot of them didn't even call themselves alchemists, right?
Right. This word came later on. I did trace it back to the ancient Greeks, and there's the Greek word semeia, which probably came from the word chima, which means fluid. Eventually, it was passed down to Arabic, and then that's the word chimia, also means to transform. It was passed from Latin to French to English. That's kind of where it turned into alchemy, which if you think about words like algebra, algorithm, alcohol, all those words that have that A-L before them.
Yeah.
That's why we associate it with Arabic origin. I think the word that has, like throughout history, that has always been around associated with alchemy is experimentation. Like you're just like, and that's why I say these guys were kind of scientists before science was a thing.
It must have attracted a naturally extremely curious person.
Definitely. Let's look at the actual goals of these alchemists, because I think in many cases they were noble goals that they all had.
Alchemists had a pretty wide variety of goals in their heads. Among others, they wanted to make gold. They wanted to discover the Philosopher's Stone, which is kind of their golden snitch, so to speak. They wanted to branch out into other related fields like alchemical pharmaceuticals and metalsmithing. Then, on the more magical side of things, they wanted to study palm reading, astrology, and they also wanted to make life from nothing.
Wait, there was so much packed in there that I want to unpack some of it. So, what is a philosopher's stone and what is a golden snitch? I didn't read the Harry Potter novels. I'm sorry.
Well, I read the first one, so you could definitely say J.K. Rowling was influenced by these things passed down from alchemists. The original Philosopher's Stone, like, it means different things in different places. If you were able to get it, you were able to live forever.
Holy Grail.
Yeah, yeah, or you could transform any metal into just pure gold if you got it. Their pursuit of it along the way, they were actually accidentally finding out things that did help society. They were the first ones who created hydrochloric acid and sodium carbonate, things that we take for granted today. They came up with new ways of experimentation that's still used today.
Wow.
So I kind of lean on that side of like, yeah, precursor to science. This is a ignore all the crazy stuff.
I think Amelia was saying every town had one.
We don't know for sure, but part of me is just, I like to think that like, yeah, no matter where you're at, there's a local alchemist.
And did they believe that like, oh yeah, the alchemist is like working on making lead into gold, man. He's going to be rich.
Believe it or not, a lot of people actually did think this was legit stuff.
There was relatively wide belief in alchemy. People in the past didn't have this strict divide between science, like chemistry, physics, and metaphysics, like religion or any other stellar explanation for the state of the world. So people who were seeking explanations for why the world is the way it is, they would take information from any source they could possibly get. So alchemy was this kind of holistic mixed practice of chemistry, metallurgy, and a pretty diverse set of occultism. There were a lot of skeptics, but it was very hard for anyone to definitively disprove alchemy as a concept because they didn't have the body of scientific knowledge that we have today. You also have to remember that plenty of respected citizens and scientists that we sometimes even respect today, like Sir Isaac Newton, they totally thought it was real. And when your crowned head of state is spending thousands of gold coins trying to research this topic, At that point, you're thinking, so many important people think it's real. Maybe it might be.
That makes so much sense because they didn't have the scientific knowledge that we have today. And so if you did boil a metal and it turned into gas and something else, then you'd be like, whoa, like, how does that even work? You would believe like, oh, I wonder if that's the hand of God and some magical thing is going on while this, like, you know, it's a chemical process, but you don't know that necessarily.
Like, we look back on it now and like, what were they thinking? But yeah, we would all be doing the same thing, trying to experiment.
It is like so much of scientific knowledge is based on trial and error. And there's things that we just take for granted today that came from, you know, centuries of just trial and error. And some of it's going to be legit science and some of it's going to be quackery, right?
Yeah, let's talk more about that quackery. It's fun stuff. So there is this branch of science called metallurgy that deals with properties of metals and their production and purification. But some of the alchemists' ideas of metallurgy were a bit out there.
In the past, people didn't have the periodic table of elements or any of the more advanced chemistry-related tools that we have at our disposal today, so they weren't really quite sure how metals worked. And one of the theories went that you can find a lot of the lesser metals. You can find a lot of copper and tin and even iron, but you can't find that much gold. So the theory went that as metals age below the ground, they grow and improve into better forms of metal, kind of like a potato. They start out like a tiny potato seed that's copper or tin or one of the other inferior metals, and then after many hundreds of years below the ground, they have grown into a glorious Yukon gold potato, so to speak. They could take this gold out of the ground, at which point it would become inert. That's kind of like an actual potato again. That's why the potatoes in your pantry don't grow a pair of legs and walk away on you. And they thought they could somehow cajole it into growing above ground much faster than the natural growth process below the ground.
That's really funny.
Yeah, they say money doesn't grow on trees, but some of them actually thought, hey, maybe it does, or maybe it grows underground.
That, I mean, it's funny, like, we make fun of that concept, but if you just didn't have all the years of scientific knowledge that we've accumulated now, yeah, you would be like, I don't know how gold is made. I have no idea. It wouldn't seem that insane that, yeah, there's iron and there's gold, and maybe if you leave the iron in the ground long enough, it turns into gold. And then maybe if we stare at it, it'll turn into gold faster.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid-back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count. ¶¶
This was before the electron microscope. This is before the periodic table. And so a lot of what we knew about elements was just pure experimentation, just seeing how substances changed.
But did they actually do things to the lead, or like, what were the processes? Like, did they literally just stand there and stare at the thing, or did they like try doing things to it?
Well, that's what alchemists did. They were proactive. So yes, they tried different things to kind of speed up the process.
There was a very large diversity in their methods, and this is partially because alchemists were kind of secretive. You know, you don't want to be the guy who tells everybody how to make gold. The alchemists' methods are often obscured, but a couple of them have been decoded or otherwise have entered the public knowledge. So one thing they liked to do was dissolve gold or other metals in really powerful acids. Basically, quite a bad time if they splash out of your cauldron. They liked making alloys of metals and mercury. Mercury is a highly volatile metal. It is liquid at room temperature, and it is also extremely toxic, and it moves in a kind of alluring, hypnotic way. So they thought that since it was so strange, that this was going to be a particularly fruitful metal to try and transform. Pharmaceutical alchemy was a branch of alchemy where they did make medicines and potions and elixirs. I would not say most of these medicines were particularly effective, but it did lay the groundwork for what we today know as pharmaceuticals. Most of their medicines were made with mercury or sulfur or other volatile, mostly toxic chemicals. I mean, like a lot of them were just useless, but, you know, like, to be honest, most of them were poisonous.
Wow. I feel like this is where the mad scientist, like, idea comes from, right? It's this guy is, like, in a secret bunker because he doesn't want people to see how he's making the gold. And he's, like, got the sulfur and the mercury, and then, poof, he's dead.
I mean, mercury is not something you just want to mess around with without extra precautions. And like Amelia said, a lot of this stuff was poisonous. You had a lot of them not exactly sure what was going to happen when they mixed two things together. So
also the pharmaceutical. I mean, what was up like with ancient medicine? Like, they're like prescribing mercury if you have a fever. And then if something's wrong with you, they're like, leech him. Put leeches on him. Like, I can't imagine.
Well, because it worked a little bit. So if it worked a little bit, any progress was like, okay, all right, let's keep doing it. I know it's a little weird. Let's just keep doing it, though.
It sucks to be you if you had any kind of ailment in, like, the 1300s.
So it wasn't just the 1300s. I mean, all the way up to the 1900s, there were crazy cures that were really just horrible for people, but they didn't know any better. Like, the example that first comes to mind, radium. It was in toothpaste. It was in cosmetics. Some believe that it treated impotence.
Isn't radium like radioactive?
Yes, it was radioactive. People were consuming it, and like they were literally killing themselves, but they didn't know. Like they thought that this was actually helping them.
Wow.
And then, of course, who knows what today in 2021, what are we consuming regularly that is actually just so damaging for us, but no one knows. No one knows.
Oreo, double stuffed Oreos. I can tell you right away.
It's not even food, is it? I mean, it tastes good, though. They taste good.
So far, alchemy sounds mildly crazy. But also, one of the things that Amelia brought up is that making life from nothing. What's that about?
So one of the things alchemists wanted to do was to create a little man called a homunculus. This was the era when you could go out and hire a servant very easily, or, you know, get an underling in other methods, but they wanted the complete obedience of the homunculus. Alchemists had lots of ways to try and achieve this, and most of them are pretty gross. One of the slightly less disgusting ways was they'd try and suck the life out of various inanimate objects or vegetables. They would use like a test tube or a straw to literally suck the life out of it and put it inside a little wax doll, for example. This, while pretty creative, was not actually successful, unfortunately.
It's creative, but not successful.
What?
Yeah, that's basically the idea of homunculus, which was supposed to be this little creature that you could potentially create. And if you just mix the right ingredients. And do you want to hear some of these ingredients that were proposed?
Oh,
by
gosh.
Some?
Do I want to know?
The first known account of the production of the homunculus is said to be in this Arabic work called Liber Vaca, or translates to Book of the Cow. These are the ingredients: magician semen, animal blood,
aww,
a cow, sulfur, a magnet, green tuchia, which is a sulfate of iron, and a large glass or lead vessel. I just can't believe this is real. I went to many different sources, though. This is legit. You do need to mix some of these ingredients together to inseminate the cow.
Oh, poor cow.
And it involves like doing other things to the cow that I won't get into. And placing this animal inside a dark house where the sun never shines. And then meanwhile, you have a mixture of ground sunstone, sulfur, magnet, and green tuchia. You have to stir it with a sap of white willow. Okay. At this point, you know, you're waiting on the cow to give birth to a, quote, unformed substance. And then once that comes out, you need to place it in the powder that you prepared. And then this blob will grow a human skin. And this will turn into a homunculus that will give you nightmares forever.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid-back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
You know, like up until this point, I felt like, oh, alchemists are cool. They're like the frontier of science. And they're like, hey, what happens if I do this? But This thing with the homunculus sounds twisted.
Yeah. The Catholic Church and medieval Europe was just like, this is a little too even out there for us. And a lot of this was done in secret. Also why alchemists were a bit notorious, because they were scam artists.
Alchemy as a science was pretty expensive. You had to have lots of chemicals, lots of tools, and for some experiments, you had to have gold to begin with. So alchemists tended to gravitate towards generous patrons. Royal patrons were extremely popular choices because they had nearly unlimited money by the standards of the day. The most generous patron, or perhaps the biggest sucker, depending on how you look at it, was Rudolf II, Holy Roman Emperor. There's a book about various alchemical scams in the court of Rudolf II. It also happens to have a bunch of other alchemical scams in it.
Ooh, alchemical scams.
Yeah, so the Holy Roman Emperor Rudolf II, who she was referring to, he definitely was all about alchemy. He would support it whenever possible. Okay, so there was this famous alchemist named John Dee from England, and he worked for Rudolf II. He had this cauldron that had a fake wax bottom, and so under the wax there were gold nuggets and gold flakes. So when he heated up the wax and it melted, what was left were these little gold nuggets. And so they're like, oh, wow, how'd you do that? Rudolf II was like, yeah, you're hired. But then over time, they realized that what John Dee was demanding to be paid to do this wasn't really worth it because, like, you know, they weren't making much money from this gold that he was...
I think it's hilarious that he was like, I can make gold and I need you to pay me to do it.
Yeah. It was costing them more to pay him than he was getting for them. Yeah. So that was ultimately why Rudolf was like, yeah, see ya, dude.
So were there a lot of alchemy con artists? And like what happened when they got caught?
We don't know of a whole lot of them who were actually con artists, but I would say it was a dangerous time to be a con.
There were some real threats in this profession. The most obvious one would be that you didn't please your wealthy patron, and in many cases, they could have you executed or jailed for failing to please them. Another problem was that alchemy, although it wasn't considered witchcraft, was not always accepted. In some cases, the leaders of countries saw it as a threat, because if you became richer than them, you could overthrow them or at least live more luxuriously than them, which is obviously unpleasing. And most commonly of all, you could poison yourself. Alchemists really liked using lead and mercury in their experiments, and both of these are elements that have really common toxicity, even in adults. Honestly, I think most of our modern imagery of the, like, wacky, capricious wizard comes from alchemists who poisoned themselves.
Again, mad scientist.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense that they were like, I'm inhaling mercury vapors and now I'm loopy, woo! And people are like, wow, that guy's nuts. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that, like, the leaders of these countries would be like, well, this guy, if he can make gold, can get richer than me. Let's kill him.
Yeah, so, I mean, they had to be careful. That's probably why there were not more con artists, because there were real consequences to getting caught.
I think because of this novel that I read, The Alchemist, years ago, like, it seemed like more of a noble profession. I guess it seemed noble, but at the same time, it seemed wacky that they were like, they would spend all their lives trying to make gold out of other things.
Mercury has 80 electrons, gold has 79. So they were kind of onto something there. I mean, whether they didn't really realize it at the time, because again, this is well before the periodic table and understanding elements like they did later on. But I think we should circle back here and say, you know, it was more beneficial for progress than it wasn't.
I mean, the con artist notwithstanding, it sounds like alchemy was important to the history, like the progress of scientific knowledge, right? Like you needed to go down all these weird rabbit holes and these weird dead ends to come to the scientific knowledge that we have today.
Yeah. I mean, they used to think there were only four elements. And so this was this planted the seed, so to speak. It really did pave the way for folks like Robert Boyle, who was one of the 17th century founders of modern chemistry. He essentially relied on some of the work of these alchemists.
That makes so much sense. You can't start from scratch to get to the point of knowledge that we have today. You have to do a lot of trying and failing and trying and failing. And the scientific advancements we have today have to be based on something. And it was, you know, standing on the shoulders of alchemists who tried a bunch of things that didn't work to get to the things that did work.
But I think still there's the side of alchemy that was just so deep into the supernatural, you know, like the superstition, really. They had to get rid of that superstition With the Enlightenment, we see a shift, across all society and the way that they pursued knowledge and understanding the natural world. And so, of course, this is going to turn the tide.
Alchemy's downfall really came in the mid-1700s. The Enlightenment and the Scientific Revolution, they brought a sense of objectivism. They really didn't want to mix metaphysical and physical disciplines. Many of the practitioners were still religious, but they wanted to have experiments that were explainable without any kind of magic. Over the course of the 1700s, alchemy managed to position itself as an opponent to this objective science, because a lot of people weren't actually happy with this new science. They wanted a science that was going to explain everything, not just the physical world. They wanted the world within them explained as well. But throughout the rest of the 1700s, alchemy slowly started to wither and die off. And by the early 1800s, I think it was fair to say it was widely dead.
Amelia said it was widely dead. It's not fully dead. I mean, let's be honest here. I'm just going to say a broad statement here, but humans today still have plenty of irrational beliefs.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
They jump to conclusions about things they don't understand. But also there's the folklore side of it that really is just so strong in cultures around the world. I mean, think about anything to do with wizards, magicians, still witchcraft. I mean...
Yeah, and even in Korean culture, I know, there's old wives' tales of if you want to give birth to a boy, you got to eat such and such. Stuff like that is completely not based in science, but people still kind of believe in it.
Old wives' tales, that's kind of, that's old alchemist tales, right?
Hashtag old alchemist tales.
A special thanks to Amelia Polka, who we interviewed for this episode. She is a researcher here at Jops Elite.
And hey, if you've ever dropped a Mentos into a 2-liter Coke bottle and had an explosion, that made you kind of an alchemist. Tell us if you've done any other crazy experiments like that on your own. Tweet us at Jops Elite Pod.
Jops Elite is produced for iHeartRadio by Zealot Manufacturing HandForge Podcast for You.
It's hosted by us, Helen Hong, that's me, and Matt Beek.
That's me. The show was conceived and produced by Steve Zamarki, Anthony Savini, and Jason Elliott.
Our editor is Tommy Nickel.
Our researcher is Amelia Polka.
Our production coordinator is Angie Jaimes.
And theme music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder.
A special thanks to our iHeartRadio team, led by Nikki Etor, Katrina Norvell, Ali Cantor, Mangesh Hadi Kador, Will Pearson, Connell Byrne, and Bob Pittman.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.